is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Chinedu in Washington, and here's what's coming up.
We've got an international terror organization that wants to show they can expand in the region. We cannot allow that to happen.
That was Jasmine Opperman, a former South African military intelligence officer who is now an independent security analyst on the risks of Mozambique's insurgency spreading. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. The Electoral Commission of Zambia says it's ready to administer transparent and credible elections tomorrow. Officials say the electoral body is prepared to organize an election runoff if none of the 16 presidential candidates reaches the 50% plus one threshold to be declared winner. VOA's Peter Clote is in the Zambian capital, Lusaka, and has this report.
Electoral officials told journalists that ballot papers are being distributed across the country on Wednesday, a day before the presidential, legislative and local representative elections. In the capital, Lusaka, the city council has started distributing ballot papers to all seven constituencies. Alexander Mwanza is the city clerk and the district electoral officer. He says the distribution has been smooth so far.
We received our share of ballot papers, that is for Lusaka district, yesterday. And what we did was to invite all the stakeholders, that is political parties, candidates, independents, inclusive, civil society, faith-based organizations, etc., etc., because we wanted to anchor the whole process on the consultation and consensus building.
Government critics have said the elections are being organized in an uneven playing field, an accusation the Electoral Commission denies. Mwanza says the Lusaka City Council has implemented measures to dispel any suspicion of bias.
You know, it's just to ensure that there's credibility and to ensure that there's no iota of suspicion in the process. That is why we are working with the stakeholders. We regard them as part of us, and it's important that they buy in. And it's important that also they are convinced that we are not favoring any political party.
Police officers have been deployed to maintain law and order and to prevent any possible violence during the polls. The deployment followed recent clashes between supporters of the Governing Patriotic Front, or PF, and the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND Alliance, that left two people dead. Esther Katongo, the police spokesperson, says the deployment of security officers forms a major part of the effort to assure citizens the country will remain peaceful throughout the election period.
We see a lot of activities happening on the ground because people are counting down on the number of days to go to the poll day. And we see a lot of emotions flaring up. We see a lot of anxieties amongst political players. Hence, the need for us, even according to the planning, that we increase on the human resource, on the manpower.
But opposition groups say the deployment of the military to help the police to maintain law and order is meant to intimidate and harass their supporters before the elections, an accusation Katongo denies.
It's not about intimidation, because from the time that the military personnel were deployed, we have not heard any adverse report to say that people are being intimidated. We are seeing a lot of people going about their businesses, and what is important is the objective why these were deployed.
Analysts are predicting a competitive presidential contest between incumbent President Edgar Lungu and his main rival Hakainde Hichilema. Both candidates are predicting first-round victory with over 50% of the votes. Lungu came to office in 2015, and Hichilema, a businessman, has run for president five previous times. The country's economy has become the main election issue. In the past several years, the economy has struggled as the price of copper, the country's main export, fell, and its international debt has risen sharply. I'm Peter Clote reporting for VOA from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Sudan Foreign Minister Maryam al-Maghdi announced today that longtime dictator Omar al-Bashir and other officials also wanted over the Darfur conflict will be handed over to the International Criminal Court, or ICC. Bashir faces charges of genocide, war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur. The UN says 300,000 people were killed and 2.5 million displaced in the conflict in 2003. Bashir has been wanted by the ICC since 2009. Human rights groups have long accused Bashir and his former aides of using a scorched earth policy, raping, killing, looting and burning villages in Darfur. Reuters reported that the ICC's chief prosecutor, Karim Khan, met with Sudanese officials on accelerating steps to hand over those wanted by the court. Militants in Mozambique's northern Cabo Delgado province are reportedly retreating following the first major victory by joint forces sent there recently to quell the insurgency. Last week, Rwandan and Mozambican forces recaptured a key town from the insurgents who call themselves Al-Shabaab and claim allegiance to the Islamic State terror group. The militants say they want to improve the lives of impoverished locals, but their attacks have claimed thousands of lives since 2017 and displaced hundreds of thousands of people. Darren Taylor reports.
With its rich natural gas deposits, Mocimboa da Praia is one of Mozambique's most important ports. It's also a transport hub linking the southern and northern parts of the country. Professor Adriano Nuvunga of Mozambique's Center for Democracy and Development says the defeat of the insurgents in the town is a small but significant win. It comes at a time when a joint force from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, and Rwanda is establishing itself in Cabo Delgado.
SADC, particularly the South African force, is important in two aspects. One, intelligence, which is necessary, is crucial, and also maritime.
Nuvunga expects South Africa's strong navy to play a big role in preventing the terrorists from operating on the coast. He believes South African military intelligence could also help immensely in tracking militant forces. But the military presence of Mozambique's nearest neighbor is coming at an immense cost to a country reeling from economic decay as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the fallout from its own recent eruption of violence in the form of rioting and looting. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says a three-month deployment of his soldiers will cost almost 1 billion rands. The director of the African Defense Review Group, John Stupart, says South Africa cannot afford this.
It's no secret that the Defense Force itself simply doesn't have the money. At the moment, we're essentially cannibalizing parts to service trucks and aircraft that have been deployed to this. It's a very expensive deployment involving aircraft and troops and even one of our ships from the Navy. And there really is no real clarity, either from the Ministry of Defense or from National Treasury, as to just where the money is going to come from outside of the Defense Force. Because the reality is if the Defense Force has to pay this, it'll sink them.
But a former South African military intelligence officer says the presence of the country's troops in Mozambique will be worth every cent. Jasmine Opperman, now an independent security analyst, says South Africa should in fact prepare for a much longer stay in Cabo Delgado.
We are looking at least, and I'm being conservative here, 2 to 3 year presence to create the stability, to enable development, to enable humanitarian support. 3 months deployment will only favor the insurgents, will benefit their propaganda voice, and it will be simply exposing our soldiers unnecessarily to a rushed engagement on the battlefield.
Opperman says South Africa has no choice but to try to secure external funding for its Mozambican operations.
Should the insurgency be defeated, they will seek escape. The nature of the insurgency is about to change. If ever they're going to expand beyond Cabo Delgado, and I'm not saying there will be attacks in South Africa, but these insurgents could find safe havens in South Africa. The fact of the matter is we've got an international terror organization that wants to show they can expand in the region. We cannot allow that to happen.
Stupart says it's entirely feasible for SADC and South Africa in particular to appeal to the European Union and the United States to help fund its anti-terror drive in Mozambique. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Tunisians have been anxiously waiting for a concrete political plan since President Kais Saied suspended parliament on July 25th and took on executive power, but a clear roadmap remains elusive. Tunisian politicians expect that the initial popularity of his move and faith in his capacity to solve Tunisia's daunting problems will win over time. Professor Khalid Chouket, former Tunisian Minister of Parliamentary Affairs and spokesperson for the group in 2015 and 2016, discussed the turmoil in the country with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
We have to admit that Saeed decisions that violate the constitution and democratic principles were found on July 25th and in last days also, a kind of support among a long number of citizens. But this sympathy will not last long. There are many challenges facing the president, among them respect of freedoms and human rights. The security forces today seem to have a free hand, and there is a clear violation of the constitution rules and the law also. The arrest of parliament members and opponents, and the travel ban on judges and politicians and businessmen are examples of what happened during the past days. And this is a big challenge.
For many observers, the decisions of Qais Saied are taking Tunis back to the concentration of powers into hands of one man, especially with his announcement that he will also have authority over the judiciary, that he will preside over the prosecution services. Would Tunisia end up with the strong man's rule?
It is difficult, really difficult, to say that Tunisia will go to a kind of autocracy or strong man's rule, even if President Saied's project is to return the country to that. Tunisia today, it's not Tunisia of 60 years ago. And the struggle of Tunisians for freedom extends for nearly two centuries now. There are thousands of people who died and were imprisoned in order for Tunisia to have a democratic system. That is why I think that it is difficult for Tunisians to accept any system that does not respect their history and their dignity.
But the workers' union seems to back the president, and they said that the political system in Tunisia should be changed. Would that mean no parliament, no parties?
To discuss this issue, to change the political system or make a new electoral code is possible always, but we should protect the democratic system as system, because the democratic system could be parliamentary or could be another kind of political systems. We have a lot of examples to mention. But anyway, respect of freedom and respect of human rights are red lines.
That was Professor Khalid Chouket, former Tunisian Minister of Parliamentary Affairs, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. Wildfires that devastated forested areas of northern Algeria for the second day have killed at least 65 people. According to the French news agency AFP, 25 of the dead were soldiers deployed as relief firefighters. Another 12 soldiers are hospitalized in critical condition. The leader of an Oromo armed group that the Ethiopian government has designated a terrorist organization says it has struck a military alliance with the forces in Tigray currently pressing forward the capital. Kumsa Durba, Oromo Liberation Army leader, also known as Jao Maro, told the Associated Press in an interview today that the only solution is jointly overthrowing the government of Abiy Ahmed. He said the agreement with Tigray forces was reached a few weeks ago after they proposed it. He added that talks were underway on the political alliance as well and asserted that other groups in Ethiopia are involved in similar discussions. Malawi's Anti-Corruption Bureau has arrested the energy minister and two other officials for alleged corruption involving a state oil contract. Political analysts say the arrests show Malawi President Lazarus Chikwera's anti-corruption drive is targeting more than just the former ruling party. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi's energy minister Newton Kambala has been arrested along with the presidential advisor Christian Mabanda and Enoch Chihana, a partner in the governing Tonse Alliance. Martha Chizuma is the director of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, or ACB. She told at a televised press conference the arrest Monday stemmed from investigations into complaints from the National Oil Company of Malawi, or NOCMA, about interference in the awarding of contracts to fuel suppliers.
The other part of this investigation was alleged serious political interference and some corrupt practices in the procurement process, and there's a recommendation that there must be prosecution of those that were allegedly involved.
The investigation found that Energy Minister Kambala attempted to influence NOCMA to award contracts for 2020 to 2021 fuel suppliers to three potential oil suppliers. The probe also determined that Chihana and Banda aided and abetted Kambala when he attempted to influence the award of the contract to supply 40,000 tons of fuel to one supplier. Political analysts say the arrests, the first of the president's allies, show Chakwera's anti-corruption drive is targeting not only members of the former ruling party. Sherif Kaisi is a lecturer of political science at Blantyre International University.
Now he has started living by his word, because historically and traditionally in Malawi, it's rarely that you see the government or any government institution which is enforcing governance issues, for example, to arrest someone holding a ministerial position.
Chakwera previously had been accused of targeting only officials of opposing parties in the anti-corruption campaign when he took power in June of last year. Kaisi says the challenge now is delays in the prosecutions.
We need to quickly point out that at Corruption Bureau, you find that there are quite a lot of cases. Some have taken 20 years. They have not yet been concluded. So we are asking the government through Anti-Corruption Bureau that the president has started living by his words. And what is remaining now is to move very fast so that the due process of law should go normally.
The ACB says the three suspects will appear in court soon after it finishes interrogating them. Its spokesperson, Egrita Ndala, told state broadcaster Malawi Broadcasting Corporation Tuesday that charges would include abuse of public office and aiding and abetting crime. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Aid groups say COVID-19 has caused greater suffering both psychologically and economically to women compared to men, especially in developing countries like Kenya. Lenny Ruvaga looks at one aid group helping women get through the pandemic in this report from Nairobi.
Kenyan beautician Cynthia Okewe was full of hope when the business she opened 4 years ago started making a profit. But the COVID-19 pandemic slashed her income by more than 80%, making daily life a struggle and sending her into a deep slump.
So many people have died and I've done so many things because of COVID. And now, even me myself, I got the counseling because I needed to understand myself and know and cope with the COVID-19 and know what's going on around me so that I can cope well without hurting myself, because I got into depression because of the COVID-19.
Okewe received telecounseling help from the Center for Rights Education and Awareness in Nairobi's Kibera, Africa's largest urban slum.
Well, welcome to Crew Kenya. My name is Nerea. How may I help you?
The counselors target women and girls who they say are more vulnerable to pandemic shocks than men because of fewer jobs and higher job losses. Nerea Akoth is the lead counselor at the organization.
With COVID, a lot of things have happened. We've seen an economy that has gone down. We've seen jobs have reduced. So even the small jobs that are available for the women is no longer there. So women are actually strained, and they find themselves in tight situations. They have to provide, yet there are no job opportunities.
The counseling service is supported by aid group Care International in Kenya, which has been advocating for women's rights for more than two decades. Dorothy Asayo, senior manager for the Women's Voice and Leadership Program, tells VOA that while the COVID-19 pandemic posed a new challenge, the group managed to help about 9,000 women so far.
The psychosocial aspect has come in very strongly because of the need of the differentiated impacts of either COVID-19 or any other issues that women and girls have been facing in Kenya. And this actually has meant that we need to support them to receive psychosocial support because of the mental health issues and also the other effects of COVID-19 on their health.
The United Nations COVID-19 Gender Assessment Report released last December found that nearly half of women-led households affected by COVID-19 needed economic and social support. For thousands of women like Okewe, the counseling has provided a much-needed lifeline. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Chinedu Okwo in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.